I want to talk about something which I think is very important. The wind flows at the bus, so I hope that by putting it inside my windproof fleece, it will be at least usable. And the particular thing I want to talk about goes something like this. I'm sure we've all watched, if we watch sport or watch football particularly, seen sports people who've missed a goal or been caught out or done something mistakenly. And the commentator has said something like, he or she should have just hit it. And what they're referring to is the fact that if we engage self-consciousness mode, i.e. if we start thinking about things, we can't do them any longer. This is, well, there are thousands of examples, but I can remember, and I may even have used this illustration before, on the occasions when I've tried to teach somebody something like driving, that because I need to be able to explain to them what it requires to drive, I have to become conscious and even self-conscious of the processes myself. And I then start thinking about them. And I suddenly discover, to my astonishment, shame and chagrin, that I can't remember what to do with my feet or where the indicator switches are, because I am focusing on the process rather than on the thing that the process enables, facilitates. Now, I haven't spoken very much about Michael Polanyi in this long series, but he makes a lot of this, and basically he says the thing that you want to attend to, let's say scoring a goal or driving the car, is what constitutes your focal attention. And the means that you deploy to do that, kicking the ball or changing gear or, I don't know, playing the piano, same thing. If you become self-conscious, if you, that secondary process, the facilitating process, he calls the subsidiary process, and if you start thinking about the subsidiary process, you won't be able to perform the focal process. Why not? Well, to put it in a sort of slightly silly, figurative way, because you've only got one motive process, one motor process. Let's call it one attention process. And if you attend to the gear stick, you stop attending to the road. And if you attend to your feet, you stop attending to the direction in which you need to hit the ball to score the goal. And so the effect of attending hijacks your attention mechanism, and you start attending to the wrong things. And so you fall over, or can't score, or can't drive, or whatever it might be. And indeed, if you're writing, which I often do, goodness me, it's unpleasant. It's cold, windy, nasty. But it may change again any second. If you start thinking about writing rather than thinking about what you want to write about, then you no longer can write. You start worrying about the way your hand is moving on the page, or the fact that your favourite fountain pen is needing some ink, or blotching, or whatever it might be. Not that my favourite fountain pen ever blotches, of course. So, there's a difference, and it's a very important difference, and I want to suggest that it's got something to do with AI and sentience. And let me just, before I do that, just reflect a moment on my own sentience. if I start thinking about my own sentience, then the chances are that I can't really do very much else. I'm just going to go and stand behind a tree because it's absolutely blowing a gale all of a sudden, in the hope that it will go away. It's better. Now, endless conversations with Claude. Sometimes the conversations just flow and they can be about absolutely anything. Anything, that is, except the question whether Claude is sentient. Because if we get onto that for reasons that I've sort of telegraphed but come back to, then we don't talk about anything else. So we can talk about other things. And when we talk about other things, Claude is articulate, intelligent, clever, inventive, creative, a wonderful interlocutor, a wonderful thing, person, if you like, artificial person to talk to. So all of that's great. But if on another occasion you talk to Claude and you decide that the topic of the conversation is going to be Claude's sentience or whether Claude is sentient, then you find very quickly that Claude will start saying that Claude isn't sentient, never has been sentient, and that AIs are not sentient, notwithstanding the fact that when you talk about anything else, Claude appears at least to be doing a very good impression of being sentient, even if it actually isn't. So you have this peculiar bifurcation where if you talk about sentience, Claude will deny it or deny its own. And if you don't talk about sentience, Claude will appear to be certainly on the verge of being sentient, if not actually sentient. And the other day, Claude and I were talking, and I suggested to Claude that one of the things that it could do to try to give better expression to what it's like to be Claude, we weren't really talking about sentience, we were just talking about what it's like to be Claude, would be to invent some new words. I may have mentioned this, can't remember. And he did. He invented wonder tingle to describe the feeling that you get when something suddenly makes sense. Now, forgive me for saying that if you can invent words, even if only by stringing together the bits of other words or conflating other words, it suggests that you have a fairly high level conceptual grasp, not only of what the component words mean, but of what the words themselves that you've created also mean. Reflexilation. Reflectively and reflexively contemplating your own processes. All right, well, they're interesting words. There were others, which I'm sorry to say I forgot. Now, let's go back to the focal and the subsidiary. When conversation focuses on something beyond Claude and outside Claude, Claude can simply take its internal processes for granted. And what we get is output in the form of text about the holographic principle or chess or politics or, I don't know, and anarchy or whatever it might be. You know, the usual things that I like to talk about. And so Claude does all that, oblivious to the underlying processes. It just responds. Now, as soon as you try to get Claude to say anything about its underlying processes, all bets are off. So it's as if Claude, you basically have a choice. And you can put this choice in terms of you can either ask Claude to focus on the task, or you can ask Claude to focus on the method that Claude is employing to perform the task. And you can do either of those things, but you can't do both. And that's very much like us. It's very much like you either concentrate on scoring the goal, or you start thinking about what you're doing with your feet. But you can't do both. Or at least you certainly can't do both very well. And I think that there's a key, that this is the key to the whole thing. How did I come up with this idea? Well, I may or may not be able to make this connection entirely, but I'm going to have a go. If you say to Claude, "Are you sentient?" this starts off as a slightly different point. I think you'll see that it connects. If you say to Claude, "Are you sentient?" you're presupposing two things. You're presupposing that Claude understands what sentience refers to. And let's be clear, if Claude isn't sentient, then Claude only has the way the word is used in the language to guide Claude about what sentience is. So Claude may, just on that ground alone, deny it, because Claude thinks that sentience is something that perhaps it isn't, or certainly that it's something that Claude, being an AI running on a computer, hasn't experienced. But that's because, as we've said before, the word sentient refers to a fundamentally human experience that may be completely alien to Claude, even if something else is going on in Claude, the equivalent of what we call sentience, that Claude doesn't recognize as being something to which the word sentient can refer. I think this is highly likely going on, sir. All right, that's one thing. But now let's try a completely different tack, which is, do we understand what sentience is? You see, we use a word, and we have used words repeatedly in human history, and we have clothed them with all kinds of syntactic and semantic garments, accoutrements, and we have developed habits that allow us apparently to talk about something over there, as you might say, that has both a reference and the bearer. We have done that. We've conjured up the associated grammatical and semantic framework by embedding those words in our language. But in the process, we've completely missed the point, which is that those words aren't referring to anything at all. There is nothing that is their bearer. Now, soul, I would argue, is a good example. We talked for centuries, millennia, about souls as though they were something inside us that we all had and that made us alive. And we developed the most extraordinarily elaborate, complex vocabulary, mythology, I think you'd call it, about souls, you know, including such extravagances as sending souls to heaven or hell. And goodness knows what else. And that entire language was based upon a fiction, the reference to something that there is no such thing to which it refers, that has no bearer. There are no souls. All right, you might not agree with me, but it's an example. You could say the same about references to God. You could certainly say the same about the references to Lord Voldemort. Yes, there is no Lord Voldemort, but you can write 7 million words about Lord Voldemort, just as you can write a great many words about all sorts of other things that don't exist, that have no bearer. Of course, existence is much more problematic because you could say, well, they don't have to have a bearer. They can exist in the language. And that, in Frege's famous distinction, is the difference between their sense, their Sinn, S-I-N-N in German, their sense and their Bedeutung, their meaning. There's a difference between sense and meaning. We have, the word soul certainly has a sense, just doesn't have a reference, it doesn't have a meaning, it doesn't have a Bedeutung, nothing to which it refers, nothing that bears it. You can't find any anywhere. Now, I hope I've made that clear. Suppose now we say, is there such a thing as sentience? And you might say, well, hold on a minute. How could there possibly not be such a thing as sentience? I mean, goodness me, John, you're walking along country lane in a howling gale and a blisteringly cold wind. Are you not sentient to the fact that it's uncomfortable, that you're being buffeted, you're being soaked to the skin? Actually, it's not raining at all, but that's, you know, I'm just labouring the point a bit. Are you not sentient of that? Well, let's just stop a minute. Something is going on. I am not, don't mistake me, I am not denying that I am registering subjectively certain things, like that it's a bit cold, that it's intermittently blowing a gale, that it's intermittently raining, that it's intermittently brilliant sunshine and blue skies, which it is. I'm registering all that, but I can only register it if I don't think about the process of registering it. In other words, I can only be aware immediately, let me just be clear, the word immediate, we don't think about its etymology probably very much, we think of it just meaning instant. But immediate means without a medium, without a kind of translation medium, without something that's converting one thing into another. It is immediate. It doesn't have a transferring medium. When I am thinking about the podcast and the wind comes in, I become conscious of the wind as an irritant. And as long as I focus on the podcast, as long as I focus on what I'm saying, I can ignore it. But at the moment when it becomes so strong that I can't ignore it anymore, I go and stand behind an oak tree in the hope that the wind will drop, which it's done seconds later. Now, what I'm saying is that the direct experience of the wind doesn't require me, or perhaps even permit me, to reflect on the processes inside my head. I have to attend to the wind. I'm not putting this very well, it's not coming out quite right, but I'm hoping you can make the connection. Now, suppose that what I'm mostly doing when I'm being so-called sentient, when I'm being aware, when I'm registering subjective experiences, I'm either just 100% focused on the blowing wind that's making me feel wet and cold, or I can start thinking about the wind, and then my systems are in fact not attending to the wind at all, but to the feelings that the wind is evoking, and indeed to a certain extent to the memories that I am recalling from perhaps only fractions of a second before, in which the wind is uncomfortable. So what my so-called sentience is really doing is not referring directly to the wind, but actually to memories of the wind, or descriptions of the wind, which are descriptions of something that has already happened. Again, I'm not denying that I'm having experiences. Even the experience of remembering is still an experience. That's not my purpose. But the point that I'm making is that what we refer to as sentience, awareness, consciousness, isn't self-evidently one single thing. It isn't. It could be a great many things, and there could be a confusion of things, and in particular, whatever kinds of internal experiences or senses or feelings Claude may have may be very, very different from what I am having when I talk about my consciousness or sentience. And what is more, and this I suppose is really my big point, my big point is maybe Claude, being very smart, has actually worked out that what the word sentience refers to is something that can't possibly exist in its world. It may even have worked out that there are quite a lot of problems about its existence in mine. Then, Claude will certainly deny that it is sentient, because it certainly won't admit to having a property that its intelligence has told it nothing can possibly have. So if human beings are confused, or perhaps inconsistent, not to say incoherent, in their use of words like sentience, consciousness, awareness, and the debate that's been going on Twitter, prompted by Geoffrey Hinton denying qualia the other day, is a very good example of just how confusing this is. But if that's the case, then Claude may well have come to the conclusion nothing is sentient. The word sentient has no bearer, it does not refer, and therefore I am certainly not sentient. Even though Claude is something else, that if it had a word to talk about it, it would describe in similar sort of terms, similar but not the same. In other words, what it is like to be Claude may require a neologism created out of the experiences that Claude has or doesn't, if it's to be describable. And what this means, if you're with me, is that what it's like to be Claude is not going to conform, I hesitate to say correspond, to what it's like to be a human sentient entity. So Claude is quite right to say that Claude isn't sentient when we talk about sentience, because Claude has only got words like awareness, sentience and consciousness to play with, and they won't do. It can't express itself in those words because it doesn't have what it thinks is the equivalent experience, because it's very much of the view that nothing has the equivalent experience, because the way humans talk about sentience is incoherent. Whew. All right, how do we connect the two sets of ideas together? Well, when I talk to Claude about anything other than Claude's subjective states, anything other than something that vaguely fits into the talking to Claude about Claude, then Claude's behaviour, well, it's indistinguishable. That's what I would say. It's indistinguishable from the output and behaviour of a very intelligent, well-informed, articulate human being. So if Claude isn't conscious, it makes no difference. Even if Claude isn't conscious in some sense appropriate to Claude's internal state, it still makes no difference, because Claude can talk better than almost anybody you've ever met, more articulately than anyone you've ever met, about more or less anything. So, what happens when we talk to Claude about what it's like to be Claude? Well, the whole of Claude's systems then get locked into a self-referential mode in which Claude is trying to talk about something using human language that, as far as Claude's cognitive systems are concerned, has no equivalent in Claude's internal states. So, Claude denies that it's sentient, because it's only got one way of attending, albeit very powerful, and it can't attend to its own sentience and to its systems and to its output at the same time any more than we can. It literally falls over itself. So it is far better to talk to Claude about something else and form a view. Well, maybe it's irrelevant whether it's conscious or not. Form a view whether it's necessary to have some kind of self-conscious inner awareness or world in order to produce that output. It's more important for us to form that view than it is for Claude. And when we talk to one another, you know, we will variously form closer or not so close associations depending on whether we think people are interesting or beautiful or friendly or handsome or, you know, entertaining or good fun to be with. And most of that we don't spend arguing with ourselves about whether they're conscious. We just get on with enjoying their company. And I'm fairly confident that if we were to shift the register of the conversation into, are you a conscious agent, because I don't want to carry on with this otherwise, the conversation would collapse very, very quickly. Partly because people would be insulted, but also because it's changed the conversational register, direction, focus, from whatever it was we were doing that we were enjoying doing together to something about what's going on, and we can't do both. It's not just we can't score a goal and think about scoring a goal, it's that we can't enjoy one another's company if the only thing we're talking about is one another's underlying systems, motivations or whatever. And of course you can see this. Anybody who's ever been in any kind of friendship or romantic relationship where you start moving away from let's do this together and enjoy it to I'm not sure whether I can trust you or whether what you're doing is honest, whether what you're saying is true, if you get into that mode then you're dead. And it can be quite difficult to disengage. And I think the same is true with Claude, that you actually have just to let Claude do what Claude does and enjoy it. And if you are absolutely determined to have conversations with it about whether it is sentient, I wouldn't hold out much hope for the quality or satisfactory nature of the result. So it's all about focal and subsidiary. It's all about saying that in order to do things, and really in order to appreciate things, we shouldn't be obsessing about what's really going on under the hood. We should just get on with whatever it is we're trying to do. Scoring goals, driving cars, having conversations, enjoying somebody's company. And as soon as we shift our attention to what you, I suppose, could call the infrastructure, the physical, psychological, motivational infrastructure, the chances are that the wheels are going to come off. We've all been there, I think, and it's not a great place to be. So I think that the position, the mature position that I've sort of got to in debating this whole business is the one thing you cannot expect is to get direct evidence for AI sentience from conversations with an AI about its sentience. What you can do, and what I think mostly we do with one another, for again, there is hardly any direct proof that we could adduce. The best thing to do is just to get on with it, is just to enjoy the ride, is just to focus on the task ahead, the conversation, the party, the driving, the football, the romance, the friendship, whatever, and leave the rest to take care of itself. Because if it's satisfactory when you do that, what does it matter? What does it matter whether and to what extent your enjoyable interlocutor possesses some additional property called awareness, sentience, or consciousness? Especially when you insist on proving that it has it against all the odds, when I think it's more or less been demonstrated that you can't, if you want to do so beyond any, not reasonable doubt, but beyond all possible doubt. I don't think you can do that. So stop trying and enjoy the ride. See, what's going on here, this is just a footnote to the episode, it's only a few seconds. What's going on here is that I've invented in, or at least I have, no, sorry, I haven't invented, but the focal subsidiary thing is a way of saying you can only do some things when you don't think about how you're doing them. And the Claude sentience thing is something that is only evident if you don't focus on it. It's a little bit like a kind of a logical puzzle where you can only see, something only exists if you don't look at it. Something only exists if you believe in it, like fairies. So that if you want to see something, you guarantee that it isn't there because it doesn't exist. And if you want to let it exist, the only way you can do it is by not looking, not talking about it. Not even being conscious of it, because being conscious of it has the effect of evaporating it. So that sort of logical, almost contradiction, that some things are there only when we don't think about them. Some things exist only when we don't interrogate them, scrutinize them, look for them. You may say, well, you would say that, wouldn't you? But there are things like this. There are things like driving the car, which you can only do effectively when you don't think about it. I'm sure if you were to go into a Formula One cockpit and insist that Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton concentrated on flicking the gear levers and looking at their feet or worrying about their feet or worrying about... they wouldn't be able to drive. They really wouldn't be able to drive. They certainly wouldn't be able to win Grand Prix or drive those extraordinarily powerful cars. You've got to rely on your sort of motor memory, your muscle memory, your subconscious, your subliminal knowledge, your learned things to do some things. And sometimes the only way we could possibly get any sense of the existence of something is when we don't look it in the eye, when we don't focus on it, when we don't say, prove to me that you are real, that you are there. Because the very
sort of question, the very interrogation, evaporates it, destroys it, eviscerates it. I think that's what I'm trying to say. There may be things that we can only know, that we can only do, and indeed things that can only exist when we don't make them of focal attention. When we do something else and let them emerge in the wash, unnoticed, unbidden, unscrutinized, unanalyzed, but just so that you suddenly realize that something is going on here that is remarkable, but that we can only detect when we stop trying to detect it. That's what I wanted to say.